Welcome to the Insights Podcast on the Acadia Broadcasting Network. I'm David Campbell.
And I'm Don Mills.
Don, today we talked with Lori Weir, the CEO of a company called Four Eyes Financial. They're a St. John-based fintech company. And I think we're going to try and do interviews with a number of companies in this sector, financial technology, because it's really starting to take off in the region. She tells us there's 140 companies in the sector and 4,400 jobs across the four provinces, specifically doing work in financial technology. So Lori told us about her business, but she also told us about the sector that's growing across the region. So I thought it was a very interesting primer on her firm and on the fintech sector in our region.
Yeah, for me, it's a bit of an eye opener because we're not known for as being a fintech hub in this region. We're starting to see some success in this region. The biggest success is Verafin up in St. John's, Newfoundland, that was bought by NASDAQ a couple years ago for billions, I guess, of dollars. And it remains in St. John's, has, I believe, close to 1,000 employees in that city. So it's a big employer. The thing that I was really struck by was the ambition that Lori expressed about the future for her company. They obviously are in a niche market, wealth management. But that's okay if you're one of the few people in that niche and offering innovative products like she and her company appear to have. So she has an ambition to grow that company significantly. They've already, in a very short period of time, they have over 50 employees working mainly out of St. John. She has an ambition to grow the company to 500, she told us. So I love that. I love that. I like to have people with a big vision for what's possible. And Lori appears to have that. And it's great for the region to have that kind of entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, we certainly need ambitious entrepreneurs. She talked about her expansion into the U.S., which is well underway, and apparently they're also experimenting now or looking very closely at the United Kingdom. So the idea of a fintech firm based in St. John serving clients all across the U.K. and the U.S. and beyond is very, very exciting. She tells us about her workforce issues. I thought it was kind of interesting. I mentioned blueberries and lumber and so on, and she said, in her business, the core, the natural resource or the raw material is the people and the talent. And she talks very positively about the quality and the caliber of the talent pool here. So that speaks well. And hopefully she'll continue to have enough talent to grow the business as large as she'd like to do it.
Well, we've talked about this on the podcast, is that the importance of the post-secondary sector in this region is probably underestimated. This is a good example, where we're attracting kids from, frankly, all over the world who want to study here. And then they want to stay here. A lot of them want to stay here after they graduate. And having opportunities in technology in general and fintech specifically is a real asset for a lot of those people who want to work in those sectors. And she indicated to us she has no problem finding, really high caliber people who are interested in the field and wanting to stay in this region because why? We have a great place to live. Not only do we have a great place to live now, but we're having more and more opportunities in a variety of sectors, including fintech, that will allow people to stay if they want to stay.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things that bothers me a bit, and it's not specific to Four Eyes, is that I do hear that a lot of these companies struggle to find their first client or their first clients in the region. And I think, Don, if I understand your company's trajectory, you had some big firms. We talked to David Hawkins. He had some big local firms locally first and then got good at it here and then was able to expand nationally. So was that your experience, that you actually were able to get customers in Halifax, in Nova Scotia first, and then use that as a base to build your business? It seems to me the opposite must be much harder, having to try and develop markets in Toronto based out of St. John.
Yeah, well, it's hard to build credibility, without having, credible clients. You know, and one leads to another. I remember when, you know, I got into business in Bermuda a long time ago, and that's before I really, you know, started to look outside Atlantic Canada in general. And having a business interest in Bermuda gave us tremendous credibility to do work elsewhere in Canada. It's just that, oh, you do work in Bermuda. Well, you must be good enough to work with if you do work in Bermuda. And, you know, it's all perception, obviously, like, you know, and ambition again. But, you know, it's usually a slow growth process. In the case that Lori mentioned, she didn't really have any local companies that could beta test what she did. So she took it right to the big market, which is Toronto. And, you know, good for her to break into that market. Like, that's tough. That's not easy to do. But one client leads to another client. And the more clients you have, the more clients you get. That's the way it works. And so she's on that trajectory now. And, you know, she should be fine because she's developed a track record she can take to the next potential client to demonstrate her capability.
Well, it's a good news story. And, of course, the sector itself is growing and exciting. So without any further ado, here is our conversation with Lori Weir, CEO of Four Eyes Financial, about her company and about the growth of the fintech sector in Atlantic Canada.
We're pleased to welcome Lori Weir, co-founder and CEO of Four Eyes Financial, on the Insights podcast to talk about her firm and the financial technology sector in Atlantic Canada. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you so much for inviting me, David and Don. I'm so happy to be here.
So before we start our discussion about Four Eyes and the financial technology sector in Atlantic Canada, we'd like to find out a little bit about your background and your career journey to the current point. Can you tell us a little bit about perhaps where you were born and a little bit about your career before ending up co-founding a fintech startup?
Well, settle in. No, I will keep it brief and high level. I was born in Ottawa. I grew up in Southern Ontario. I've spent my adult life in St. John, New Brunswick. I'm an entrepreneur. I think that's how I would identify. Started my first company in 1996. It was a corporate adventure-based learning company called Peak Adventures, and we served companies throughout the Atlantic region. And that business evolved. We realized that the kinds of learnings that we were offering and experiences were great, but ultimately the environment in which people worked in really made the biggest difference in terms of how people were able to perform in their work. And so we like to say you can't make ice cubes in an oven. And so we moved our practice and our thinking to the actual companies and focused on organizational design, development, leadership, how to actually build out teams that could deliver on and build out processes that could deliver on the expectations of the companies. I'm a black belt in Lean Six Sigma. I've developed and delivered a coaching program called Peak Coach that is widely used across Atlantic Canada. I invested in with my business partner in a program called Premium Price Selling. And so sales is something that I understand very well, and revenue generation. One of my clients, you know, some of our bigger clients were Pratt & Whitney in Montreal, J.D. Irving, and some wealth management firms in Toronto. And one of those clients was Scotia Wealth. And it was during my work with Scotia Wealth that I saw an opportunity. The co-founder in Four Eyes is also an entrepreneur who's had a couple of different tech companies. And he and I would have conversations. That's Kendall McMiniman. As we had those conversations, we saw opportunity to solve a big problem. And the problem was having investors feel more confident that they were invested in the right products. And that's really the genesis of Four Eyes.
So tell us about Four Eyes. When did you and your partner start the company? And maybe a little bit more about exactly what it does.
Sure. So we started the company in 2015, and it's kind of a classic startup story. Kendall and I are co-founders in the business. We're also partners in life, and we started the business in our basement. So basically, we had people who were previously had worked with Kendall in other startups, and they would come after their day jobs, and we started building our minimum viable product in the basement. I fed them dinner, and this went on for some time. We did go to market in 2017, 2018. We signed our first client. A little bit about the product. When we went into market, we were meeting with wealth firms, and we met with compliance teams in wealth firms. And we heard from them that the solution we built was something that they could use in their back office to help meet regulatory requirements. And so we really leaned into that. We found our first client who was really keen on the offering and supported us in developing what is now known as RISC-7. That's our trade surveillance and supervision solution. We have multiple products on what we call our intelligent compliance platform today. But that is our flagship product. And basically what that means is if you have an investment advisor, they're buying and selling products on your behalf. And what we do is we connect into that book of record, the custodial service, and we pull that data nightly. We run it through our ETL and map it to our software solution. And that enables us to present to the compliance teams a dashboard where we roll up all of those trades and put them into in a meaningful way so they can make good decisions about whether or not that trade was offside and whether or not the advisor and the firm is meeting their regulatory obligations.
Well, that sounds very technical. What would be the benefit of someone like me who uses a wealth management firm? How would that help me?
So the way in which that helps you is I'll describe another one of our products, which is our digital onboarding solution. So if your advisor onboards you into their firm, you might use our digital onboarding solution, which collects what is known as KYC or Know Your Client information. If they're using the 4Eyes solution, we collect a little bit more information around Know Your Client that can be used in future work streams related to what is known as investment suitability. So you may not know, you may not feel it directly, the impact of our solutions. But what we do is we enable you to feel more confident that the products you're invested in actually meet your risk tolerance. And that's really the key to our solution. So we talk about strengthening market integrity as one of the reasons that we exist. And although people don't directly as individuals feel that, it is clearly key to the strength and stability of our economy that individuals are investing in the market.
Right. So as an individual client, would I receive anything from your company, or is it only through
You'd receive an invite, and then you'd fill in the digital, digitally, you would fill in your onboarding form, right, and that data would be collected. So you would have that experience.
Okay, but after that, it's all with the wealth management firm that you would be working with.
Yeah, exactly. We have multiple solutions. So, for example, there's something called client-focused reforms. This is very exciting stuff for people. People love regulation. But it's been great for us because the regulator really wants advisors to show their work, to make sure that advisors are actually looking at multiple products for Don Mills, that he's not or she's not just picking where he gets the best commission or a product that she's used to selling, that there's actually some research and investigation happening to make sure that the products that are being put forward to you, Don, are really suited to you. And we have a module on our platform that enables advisors to do that. It's called Product Comparison. And they can attest after they've that you've made the choice that they have done that research. We also have a point of sale solution, so they would send out the fund facts for those products to you before they actually do the buy, which is a requirement of the regulator. And so you would receive some things as a direct result of the solutions that we have. But ultimately, you know, we are serving what you'd call the back and mid office of these investment firms.
So let's talk a little bit more about your business. So can you tell us how many employees you have?
We have 52 employees, and we are particularly proud that 50 of them live and work in New Brunswick.
We'll talk about expansion plans in a minute, but before we do that, can you tell us where your clients are based and maybe even give us a few names of clients you work with?
Sure. The majority of our clients are in Ontario, as you know, the Centre of Financial Services is in Toronto, the GTA. And of course, that percentage is equal to our client segment as well. We have clients in Montreal and in Winnipeg as well. So we work with firms like Wellington Altus. They're based in Winnipeg, and with branches all over the country, and they're one of the fastest growing wealth management firms in Canada. We work with CI Wealth, Aligned Capital Partners, another very fast growing firm. We work with some insurance companies, the wealth divisions from insurance companies. And we also have Morgan Stanley as a client who recently opened a securities dealer in Canada.
So you've told us a little bit about the product itself, but can you tell us, there seems to be so many companies in the fintech space, can you tell us what's unique or different about your product compared to your competition?
Our space is fairly niche, as you probably gathered from my description, and actually there are very few competitors in Canada and globally. Certainly there are people that play in our space, and what makes us different is we take a data-first approach to delivering our solutions. All of our clients get a data warehouse where they can store the data that we're collecting. In the way in which we collect data enables them to use that data for other purposes, which becomes more and more important as people are looking to really develop and execute on their machine learning and AI strategies. Having clean data is critical, and we enable that. Another thing that makes us different is trade surveillance, even if digitized, often looks like a trade blotter, and it's basically just a list of all the trades that have happened in order in which they appear. And what we do is we collect those transaction details, and we organize them in a way that the back office can actually make good choice around what to do with it. Because a trade that happens at 9 in the morning and one that happens at 2 in the afternoon together give more information than just looking at something trade by trade. And that's value that we add to enable really decision making that's faster and better. And so we're giving capacity to these teams. The cost of compliance is increasing in Canada. It's increasing globally. And so decreasing the cost is really important to these prospects and clients that we're serving.
So you recently posted on social media that your team grew by 31% in 2023. Last fall, you received support from Opportunities New Brunswick to develop new markets in the United States. Seems to me that the data privacy rules and the whole regulatory environment is considerably different in Canada versus the U.S. So can you tell us a little bit about your international expansion plans and whether or not there's a lot of differences there when you're moving into that market?
So we think primarily about the regulation around trading and investment more than privacy. Of course, privacy is very important, and we meet the PIPEDA rules here in Canada. They're very similar in the U.S. We actually are looking and doing some market readiness in the U.K. So I'll be able to tell you more about the GDPR there in May when I get back from the U.K. But the regulatory requirements are very similar in Canada, the US, UK, and Australia. So that makes it, these make for good markets for the 4Eyes platform and solutions.
So just to expand on David's question, tell us about what your hopes are in terms of expanding your company over the next few years. Well, how big can you become based on where you are today?
Our vision is to be a leader in global compliance, and we see all kinds of evidence to support that that is very possible for us. We have conversations happening with very large global players that have custody and clearing services that are interested in the 4Eyes Risk7 solution to enable their custody and clearing service. That allows for accelerated expansion into new markets. The time is really now for financial services and a changing of the guard from old legacy tech to what we call our solution, which is built for change. I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. Timing is everything, and I have never seen a better opportunity in terms of where innovation, technology is crossing beyond just the need for the best tech, because the best tech doesn't often win the status quo, let's say, from legacy tech, because the pain of removing that is pretty deep and costly for firms to think about taking existing solutions out. But the regulatory demands, the cost of that, the push forward with what to do with data and having access to data to leverage AI, all of these things are pushing people to think about moving away from the solutions that they've been using for the last 10 or 15 years and looking to something new. And that's really the impetus for our growth.
So how big will you be in 3 years' time if everything goes according to your plan? How many employees will you have in 3 years' time?
The number of employees, I imagine we have been growing pretty steadily. I can see a time that we're 500 employees. But ultimately, I'm an operator and a practical business person, which is not, what you hear from tech innovators, and we've taken a very practical approach to growing our business. We said, let's look at Canada, let's own this market, let's create a foundation, and then let's look at growth. We're selling into large institutions that make decisions slowly, but then once they make them, as I mentioned, they're with you for 10 or 15 years. And so you've got to really be purposeful in your market expansion, and you've got to also have the capital behind you to stay in those markets for 2 to 3 years, because it might take that long to secure your first customer.
You mentioned earlier that you're based in St. John, where most of your employees are. I guess 50 to 52 are in New Brunswick. So you have offices in both St. John and Moncton, I believe, and you also offer work from home options. Just tell us about where your workforce is currently located, and how many of them are currently working from home.
Sure. One of the things that was important to Kendall and I when we started 4Eyes is we wanted to create interesting work in the innovation economy. We are interested in creating, and this goes back to the idea of why FinTech in St. John, is creating a business where talented individuals could find interesting work and not have to leave their community. And community is the key word here. One of the value propositions of working at 4Eyes is that you can be part of a community. And we encourage people to actually be in office, and the kinds of people that want to work at 4Eyes are interested in being in the office. That doesn't mean every day. However, we kind of test that out, because in the first 3 months, we do require people to be working in office, whether it's in our Moncton office or in St. John, because we are working on an AWS platform, which can sometimes be new for people. We're working in financial services and wealth management with a lot of data, which can be new for people. And so having mentors in office that can help and guide and be available is really important for folks in those first 3 months. And then people can work from home. And so we don't always have the same people in office, but we always have a pretty good group of people.
Yeah, I would imagine with, you know, development work that it's probably beneficial to be together to, you know, play off each other in terms of ideas and that sort of thing. You know, we wanted to ask if, you know, remote work from home based sort of environment an opportunity or a threat, especially with the fact that, you know, the fact that people can work from anywhere means that people can poach your employees, right? And from anywhere as well. So, you know, what's your position on that? Is that an opportunity or a threat for the company?
Well, I think being really clear about the value proposition of building community and being a place to be is what differentiates us and the kinds of people who want to work here. And our employee retention is very high because of that. We know the kind of people who will be happy here. And so they're not likely to be distracted by other opportunities in terms of poaching. That's not to say it can't happen, but we have not had that problem here. And in fact, yes, the world is available for tech workers to work in. And so, you know, this differentiator has really benefited, I think, the people who want that kind of experience, and it's certainly benefited the company. Working in complex tech, sometimes it takes people 6 to 9 months to really start adding value. So if they're only with you a couple of years, that gets expensive and certainly doesn't help to accelerate your growth.
So we wanted to turn and ask you some more general questions about the fintech industry. I'm going to ask you a few maybe more nationally oriented, then we'll talk specifically about Atlantic Canada. You recently joined something called the Council of Canadian Innovators. Can you tell us a little bit about this group and why did you get involved?
Sure. I got involved last fall. It was actually Kathy Bennett, who's a well-known advocate for strengthening the Atlantic region and the economy. She actually made the introduction. I wasn't aware of them before then. I went to the conference in Ottawa, and it was one of the best events I've ever been to. I felt very much among my people. These are the top CEOs in tech in the country. But a small group, there were like 150 people there. And so intimate enough to, you know, really get to know people and talk about issues. As a St. John Tech CEO, you know, not in market with our clients, but also not in a space where you can run into somebody on the street and talk about things like global talent management, SHRED, other things that are kind of top of mind and that you kind of think about, but you don't have a way to actually enact or help make change around. CCI emerged from a group of CEOs that were involved in a conversation with Jim Balsillie and John Ruffalo, and it was organically CCI grew out of that first meeting where people talked about some of the challenges that they were having scaling their tech companies. And it was a very focused and specific conversation. Many of them thought it would be useful to have a group of people who were advocating on behalf of the needs and desires of this group of people. And so CCI was kind of born from that.
Are there other maritime or Atlantic Canadian CEOs in that group?
There are. Craig Rowe is with ClearRisk. He's based in St. John's, Newfoundland. IntroHive is also, the CEO of IntroHive is also engaged in. And I'm sure there are others that I'm not naming. But they are opening their first Atlantic Bureau actually this spring. And so I expect there will be more Atlantic Canadian firms that choose to get involved.
So we've heard a lot lately about artificial intelligence as a disruptor of many industries. I think at a high level, I would assume it's going to have an impact in your industry. Can you tell us how AI may or may not impact the wealth management sector and how, if you are looking to leverage this technology in your firm?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't get away from it, right? It's everywhere, and everybody is engaged around it, which is truly exciting. In the wealth management space, that, you know, is no different. In terms of client service, in terms of marketing and content, and I would say document retrieval and just like pulling key information from internal documents, these kinds of things are being used in wealth management. Morgan Stanley launched something they call an AI assistance for research back in September of 23. So these kinds of applications exist and will, you know, continue to grow as people feel more confident, I would say, in the ability to have it be more client facing. Four Eyes is very interested in machine learning and AI. We've actually dedicated two resources specifically to AI. We use machine learning currently in our trade surveillance in order to auto clear alerts. And so we're looking at our, you know, we're involved in our own internal process improvement around risk rating products with a higher level of confidence. So if you're invested in a security or an ETF or a mutual fund, that there's a risk rating on that product that changes regularly. And we have to track all of the risk ratings because we have a risk rating algorithm that enables advisors and clients and firms to feel confident in suitability. So that's a project that we're currently working on. We see other applications, for example, enabling from an alert perspective, improving our auto clearing of alerts, things of that nature. But yeah, it's huge and it's on topic and it's discussed regularly. And it's very interesting for me to look at how, as a country, we're going to look at regulating that in terms of leveraging existing regulators or introducing new ones. So I do follow it quite closely, and it's in everyone's best interest that it rolls out in a way that encourages people's confidence rather than decreases it.
Yeah, that's for sure. So Don and I, we tend to do lots of research on the people we interview to make sure we understand your business. And in this process of research, I ran into an article in Investment Executive, which described you and your fellow fintech leaders in Canada as increasingly frustrated. Your name was associated. I don't know if you purposely said frustrated, but somebody in the article was frustrated, calling on the federal government to move ahead with promised plans to give consumers more control over their financial data. Can you give our listeners a sense of what that issue is and why it's a problem in Canada, and what is the proposed solution that you're looking at?
For sure. Open banking was particularly topical when we first started our company. It's less important now, but I'm still very interested in the topic and in the legislation. So, the discussion around open banking started when we started Four Eyes. And on April 16th, in a few weeks' time, the framework for open banking is supposed to be part of the budget that's released. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens. What open banking is, and often it's called consumer-driven or consumer-led banking, is it allows individuals to have ownership of their own financial data, much like health data is now being available to individuals. And what this means is the larger financial institutions would make available, because they hold most of this financial data, to third-party fintech providers that can add value to that data to help consumers make better decisions on things like tax, credits, loans, mortgages, credit ratings, things of that nature. And so the UK actually introduced legislation for open banking in 2017. So there's some history now to look back and see whether or not it's been successful or unsuccessful or what it's really done. Some of the interesting findings is that the large financial institutions did not lose a whole bunch of market share. People have been using it. It's been a slow adoption. Interestingly enough, in Brazil, it's you know, they were later in the game, but it's really exploded there, five times the number of people who are making use of it, of the various applications. But ultimately, you know, it's an opportunity for innovating in Canada, and something that if we don't innovate in this country, we will be using products that other people have created in other markets where this opportunity existed for them to actually do this type of work.
Just as an aside, Laurie, I'm currently in the United States, and one of the things that really always strikes me when I come to the United States is how far behind they are in the banking industry compared to Canada. You know, their unit banking sort of method down here really makes innovation really hard to kind of introduce. And, you know, one example that I saw even this week is the use of things like, you know, credit card machines at the table. They're just literally introducing them now in this country. And so, you know, just do you think that does that cause any issue with what you're trying to do with the fact that the banking system is so different in the U.S. versus Canada?
It doesn't affect it certainly doesn't affect us personally with our 4Eyes application because we're selling into businesses.
Right. We want to just ask you a few questions about the fintech sector in New Brunswick, specifically in Atlantic Canada overall, which is our focus, obviously. Can you give our listeners an idea about how large the sector is currently in terms of employment, maybe the number of firms, and maybe a little bit about the future for the sector in this region?
Yeah, so what's interesting is when we decided to start 4Eyes in St. John, New Brunswick, we didn't know of any other fintechs really in the region. Like an elevating and growing sector wasn't part of our decision. The main reason that we started it in St. John is because this is where Kendall and I lived, and we felt this is a technology solution. We were both inspired to create, actually, and be part of a new sector and building up the next generation of work. Thinking about the future generations and what type of work is available in the region was a critical part of why we chose to start our business here. What was interesting is as we got going, we were introduced to Atlantic FinTech that started a few years after we did. And it was wonderful to see the role that they play in trying to create awareness and leadership and bring a common voice to the fintech sector and the opportunities it can bring to the region. It really matched our values and our mission as a company as well. And there are, you know, 140 fintechs, according to the research they did with a researcher called Fathom for Insight, and 4,400 employees working in the region. And I think it's a sector that is destined to grow. And, you know, you've been asking about some sort of consumer fintech applications which exist. There are also enterprise or back office fintech solutions that exist. The biggest exit in, you know, from Verafin to sold to NASDAQ in 2020 out of St. John's, Newfoundland is, I think, a shining example of what's possible in this region from a fintech and a regtech perspective. And I think, you know, there's lots of support from ACOA and OMB that gets directed into Atlantic FinTech and some of the, you know, programs that they put forward to help get people in market and to support them and scale their growth.
So I just want to push a little bit on that a bit, because I understand why we have forest companies here, because we have lots of forests, we have lots of trees. I understand why we have a fishing sector, because we have lots of fish. I understand why we have lots of blueberries, because we have people like John Bragg that decided to plant a ton of blueberries. But I'm trying to understand why fintechs, your customers are all in Toronto or New York or elsewhere. I'm trying to understand why, other than the fact that you're from here, and I get that, but you could have started any one of a number of startups. Now, you did tell us earlier, you gave us a little sneak preview, because you said you had a client called Scotiabank in another business, and you saw an opportunity dealing with them there. But I'm trying to understand those 140 fintechs. It seems like that's quite a large number. Why would they set up in places like St. John and Halifax and St. John's? Is there something there that I'm missing? And did they come out of universities? Is there some other thing that I'm missing? Or is it just sort of, it's a growing sector and entrepreneurs down here saw opportunities, even though their clients are far and wide?
I think it's the last bit there, David, honestly, because the new economy is based on technology. And I would dare say, even though we have blueberries and lumber and fish here, they get exported all over the world. So we're not consuming all of that stuff here. And the input is the brilliant talent that's coming out of the learning institutions here. That's the input. That's your fish, that's your lumber, that's your blueberries. It's the young people who are either coming to Atlantic Canada for their education. So we are hiring people from, you know, UNB, from the community colleges, from St. of X, Dal, incredibly talented people who are moving to this region to go to school. So we have people from Rwanda, Jamaica, India, from all over the world who are coming to school here. And so one of the reasons that we have these programs is to encourage people to stay and live in the region, in the country, and you've got to provide interesting work for them in order for them to want to do that. And so people say, do you have difficulty getting talent? We have no difficulty getting talent. These are the brightest people graduating, the top of their class, and they want to do interesting Silicon Valley type of work, and they're happy to do it in a place where they can actually buy a home, have a family, have a sense of place, and we offer that here. And so I know about fintech, but I imagine there's other tech sectors that are equally growing in the region where it might not seem obvious why they would if their sort of core clients aren't based here. We intend to be delivering services all over the world. And so whether we're in Toronto or St. John, those folks aren't going to really, that's not going to make much difference to them.
Yeah, I buy that argument, although I would say like med tech, a lot of that is coming out of Dalhousie University. You can kind of see the pathway in, and I've always been a little curious about fintech, but Don's going to ask you a couple more questions to pin that down a little further.
Yeah. In your own market, there's a company called Owen McFadden, that McFadden Group. You're probably familiar with them. It just makes us wonder, are there local financial sector firms willing to be beta customers for a local fintech startup like you?
That was not our experience. No.
No. Yeah. So it's hard to get local involvement in this sort of thing.
Yeah, and for us, there probably would have only been one potential client for us in the region.
Right.
So we did have to. I mean, certainly we had to spend a lot of time in the GTA.
Right.
In the early years. For sure.
Yeah.
COVID was really good for us in that, in our early times, we would go in and meet, with a prospect and have a fantastic meeting. And they would say, you should come back next week and meet with so-and-so and this vice president. And, we were on a shoestring and we'd be like, okay, and we'd have to fly back and have a meeting the next week because this was the expectation that you'd be face to face on these direct sales calls. Post COVID, we've closed two of our biggest clients. Yes, we had an engagement with them face to face, but most of the meetings and deal was done just like we're conversing right now. So that has really made some changes in, a traditional industry where face to face was necessary is not so much anymore.
Yeah, I want to talk about building a business. You know, I had the experience of building business outside Atlantic Canada as well. You know, part of it is confidence. You know that you can compete, obviously, but finding prospects and building relationships is it's hard doing it from distance, obviously. I wanted to ask you about the support that you're getting through, provincial governments and ACOA. You know, and you mentioned earlier on that they have a bit of a focus on the fintech sector. What are they doing to support companies like you?
They are not supporting directly companies like ours. They're doing it, as I mentioned, through Atlantic FinTech. So they would invest in perhaps supporting a cohort if people go to something called Money 2020, which is a large fintech conference in Las Vegas. Now, okay. we don't participate in that because when you think about fintech, the largest percent of sort of subsectors are payments and core banking, which are about 70% of what encompasses fintech. Wealth tech, which is the space that I'm in, is about 8%, maybe 7%. So right. to go to these big events doesn't make sense for us because finding our clients there is quite difficult. And so we very specifically focus on wealth tech. And like any government program, they're not going to focus on, individual custom. They have to kind of get the biggest bang for their buck. Now, ONB and ACOA have been very supportive of Four Eyes as a company. And I've worked with both of those organizations in previous companies that I've had, which I'm sure helped to some extent, but they have been very supportive of our company and our growth.
So I want to push just a bit on this, Lori. How do you find your clients? What's your process of finding your next client? Because it's not advertising, obviously. Is it referrals or are you prospecting on your own?
So our go-to-market strategy is direct sales supported very strongly by marketing and a team approach to getting the sale across the line. So we actually only have one salesperson in our firm. That is our head of growth, who's based in Toronto. And Kendall and I support that direct sales effort in market. We have built our brand in the market through thought leadership. And so I would say because we're in such a niche space, anyone that could potentially be a client of ours is aware of us. And when it times for their contract to renew for the type of solution we offer, we will be in the mix. And we make sure that we're ever present on their minds, not in their faces necessarily. But we spend a lot of time at very specific regulatory conferences, wealth management events within the industry. And of course, we keep in touch with our core prospects through various ways, including sending them lobster from New Brunswick, which they appreciate. but ultimately, once the time comes and we're competing for the business, it's very much a team sport. And so internally, we have sales coordinators, people who are experts in the contracting side of our business. Because, for example, one of our clients, it was a 12-month time frame to close our master services agreement with their head office out of New York City. And so we also have account managers who expand our sales opportunities inside client organizations. We have 20% year-over-year expansion revenue coming from existing clients. We have a lot of product to sell. But we envisioned that being the same approach that we take in new markets as well, is really having somebody who is credible, senior, well-networked in the wealth management space to be our person or persons on the ground that we wrap around skill sets from Canada, perhaps from New Brunswick, that support them in their sales efforts. And Kendall and I are very actively engaged in the sales process as well.
Right.
So you talked earlier about your recruiting of staff and that you weren't having a lot of challenges. That's kind of counter to what we have heard among some firms that have complained it's getting increasingly difficult. to find workers and that there is some poaching going on. So that's good to hear. Maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about how, what's different about you guys. How are you keeping a relatively high level of retention? Are you, do you do anything different as a firm?
I'm not sure what others are doing, so I don't know if it's different. But as I mentioned, I think it's in the selection process. So we're really, when we invite people and during the, you know, recruitment process, we talk about how hard it is to work here and how hard they're going to work. That it's probably going to be the hardest work they've ever done, but they're going to leave here with many more options than they could imagine as a result of the learnings that they're going to get. We talk about the importance of community and being in the space and learning from each other. And there's a very high level of expectation and performance from folks at work here. I'm sure that's not different than other places. And we do have employee-led events, so things that make people happy. So we, you know, and I know other firms do this too. I don't think it makes us unique. So we have a regular book club event that happens every quarter. We have video game nights. We have board game nights. We have various things that bring people together because sense of community is important. We kick off every day with the entire company on a morning call. And we have rituals around that morning meeting that are important to keep people connected because some people are working from home and we're in two different geographic office locations. Kendall and I participate in those meetings. We do a joke of the day, a song of the day. We have segments. We have a few laughs, but we also understand the exact work that everyone is doing every day. So people aren't stalled and they can excel and move forward. So there are a lot of good things that come from some of these cultural touch points. So I'm not sure, but we do have high retention and you know, there are sometimes unfortunate things that make the workforce and the talent pool bigger. IBM leaving Fredericton left a lot of, you know, folks, you know, who we've brought on in inside of our firm. And, you know, there are ebbs and flows in tech talent.
Yeah, no doubt. Just one last question on that front. Are you, and I did a little research before this interview, but are you having luck attracting more women into the firm on the programming side or on the development side?
Yeah, well, that's something I'm particularly proud of course, being a tech CEO who is also a woman. And 50% of our development team are actually women, which we're very proud of. And it's interesting because we have not had that much difficulty. I think, you know, your first 15 hires are always difficult because people don't know who you are and it seems a little risky. But as we get bigger, it actually, you know, people are aware of us. They know we exist. And then there's also the referrals from people who are here. Mm. And that does make a huge difference from an employee recruitment perspective. We get a lot of referrals from existing workers who then have to vouch for their incoming as well. But all of these things are very helpful.
You know, the post-secondary sector has done a lot on tech. You know, there's the Adults, there's the Idea Hub, you know, through the engineering side of things. And, you know, UNB's got some things going on as well. But there's not a lot specifically on fintech. I wonder if there are institutions that you're aware of that are doing a better job than others in terms of supporting the fintech sector.
Yeah, there is actually a DAO. They have a fintech certificate. It's focused, I think, more on the business side rather than the, you know, computer engineering side. Mm. Yes, and Maria is the woman, I'm trying to think of her last name, that runs that program. She does an amazing job. Maria Pakurar, yes. And she does an amazing job with that program. So I think there is starting to be, you know, sort of more thinking about fintech. And for us at Four Eyes, we're of course, very keen to support anything that is fintech specific, because there is definite value in us hiring people who understand the fintech ecosystem, understand financial services. It's certainly helpful, but we're part of developing that knowledge base in the region. So people come in here with very little understanding about financial services or the wealth management industry or regulation. And, over time they're, you know, consulting with and giving advice to our clients who are, you know, we are really known and we have to be as subject matter experts in our space.
Right. I want to turn to compensation in terms of offering competitive packages for your employees, you know, in competition now with the world, really, not with regional firms any longer. You know, what are the salaries like in your sector right now?
So there is a broad range, a wide range, really, in salary and salary expectations. And, you know, if we certainly come across people who have worked at, you know, some of the Magnificent Seven firms with an expectation of salary that we certainly won't match at Four Eyes. But having said that, I think, you know, we don't compete necessarily on salary, but we certainly pay fair, a very fair wage. I think regionally it's fairly equitable for firms that are kind of based in the region.
So you mentioned earlier the initiative Atlantic FinTech. We'd like you to just describe that a little bit more to us. Is that's like an industry association, or is it just sort of a marketing group? But what is it? Do they have members? They're funded by ACOA. What can you tell us just a little bit about Atlantic FinTech?
Yeah. So Alicia Rossman is Mac. You probably have met her. I'm probably pronouncing her name. I butchered it, but she is the leader of Atlantic FinTech. She was a key person in incubating the fintech sector in Israel. And she's brought that knowledge and network into the region, which is extremely powerful and helpful. It is a membership-based organization, so you pay to be a member. And they'll help with things like scaling your business, coordinating efforts through government agencies to send people off to things like Money 2020 or FinTech Meetup or some of these larger events. Introduction to potential customers, introduction to potential investors, a leadership and a nurturing, I would say, of an early stage sector in the region. That even though sometimes I'm not participating in most of the things that they do, I'm a huge advocate of this because this sector is critical and it is going to continue growing. And I believe very firmly that Atlantic Canada can be a leader in this sector.
A final question, specifically related to your position as a business leader based in St. John. And I found it interesting that you said you weren't born in St. John. You chose St. John, you and your partner, or maybe your partner was from St. John.
He is an East Side St. John guy, born and bred. Yeah.
So he's got the roots. He's got the roots there. But anyway, I wanted to ask you, St. John's had some, let's say, kind of a rough go sort of broadly as a regional economy and as an urban economy in Atlantic Canada. We're starting to see green shoots there in terms of population growth and things like that. But what is your outlook for the economy and population of St. John these days? Is there a buzz? Is it starting to generate some positive momentum, or is it still kind of a tough slog in St. John these days, just in general, not specific to FinTech?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, St. John's, I guess the last sort of statistic grew 2.4%. As of 2022, so lots of growth across the region in that time frame. I have to admit that my gaze is kind of outside of St. John and outside of the region, quite frankly, from focusing on the growth of the business. And because we haven't had too much trouble in terms of recruiting employees, it hasn't been top of mind for me. But I'm actually participating in an event tomorrow as Envision St. John continues to think about its growth strategy and how to grow the region. St. John is known as a, you know, industrial, but also a business hub, a place where things are made and sold. And that is something that's ingrained in the culture here. It's one of the things that I really loved about St. John and why I chose to stay here. People want to build and create things here. And so people can build and create any number of things here. And I'm encouraged by that cultural aspect of St. John, that appetite for building and creating. I think it will serve the region extremely well. And there's lots of work to do, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, Don and I are big fans of St. John, and we're really crossing our fingers and hopeful that it, and we've played a little, well, we've did some consulting too separately to try and help sort of move things along or make things a little better in St. John. So we're crossing our fingers that St. John will do well in the coming years. Lori, thank you so much for joining us today on the Insights Podcast and telling us about your business and the exciting growth that we're seeing in the fintech sector all across Atlantic Canada, and helping clarify for me, you know, what is it here that makes us a great place for that type of industry.
I really appreciate the opportunity, David and Don. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks very much, Lori.
You've been listening to the Insights Podcast from the Acadia Broadcasting Corporation. Follow the show and listen to past episodes on your favorite podcast platform, like Apple or Spotify. If you've enjoyed the show, why not recommend it to a friend? Don and David will be back next week with another deep dive into some key issues in Atlantic Canada.